Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we spend some time under the covers with Matthew Sweet and Susanna Hoffs.
Oh, okay. Hey, Jim.
Yes.
This is a happy and a sad day because it's happy because we're going to hear Matthew Sweet answer some listener questions.
Sweet.
Which I'm very happy about. But also because it's sad. It's the last day. This is all we got. And it was a really wonderful visit with Matthew. He gave us more time than we originally asked for. He was very patient with us.
And he wanted to keep going.
He did. It was great. We had a really nice conversation. It almost struck me a little bit like, I don't know... It seems like, you know, before you have to go on stage, there's really like nothing to do. And you're just kind of sitting back there just waiting. You're looking at this big clock everywhere and you're just kind of waiting, right? You're doing your laundry or something. So it seemed like it was nice. He felt like it was a nice way to kind of pass the time before the show.
Yes. It was a nice way for us to pass time before
the show.
Sit there
in the dressing room before the show and chat with him. It's really nice.
The other thing that makes me just a little bit, you mentioned being sad a little bit today. The other thing that makes me a little bit sad as we sit here right now is that I'm drinking water. but I'm doing that for a reason because
You and our and good friend of the show, Jasper Colt, were out burning the midnight lamps last night.
Yeah,
so.
I'm really tired, so I'm going with water today.
Good job.
All right. So we mentioned yesterday that we have part three of the interview with Matthew Sweet, and in this part we take listener questions.
Can't wait.
And he was great about that. He loved getting the listener questions.
Yeah.
So let's just dive right into that.
Sounds good.
Here's some listener questions. Okay, this is a good one. From Justin Steiner, he asks about your new record. Did touring the 25th anniversary of Girlfriend inspire you in making the new record?
Well, I've never thought about that, but we did tour Girlfriend a whole lot starting when? I guess 2011. We did two or three years. We mostly played the whole Girlfriend album. So that's a good question. Maybe that did influence me, and that's why people think it reminds them of Girlfriend.
Now, you're going to have to speak to this a little bit, Patrick. You probably know this better than I do.
Okay.
Kevin Clement asks, to ask Matthew about his time in the band Community Trolls with Michael Stipe.
Right. Where
well,
I think
it wasn't
really only three songs ever came of it or something like that, right?
I mean, Community Trolls with me and Michael Stipe was a thing that happened over the course of a few days, you know.
Okay.
I can't remember. He just had some song ideas, and for some reason we were hanging out, and I played some little chords behind it, and he knew this guy, John Keane, who later became really well-known as an Athens engineer producer. At the time, he had just a simple 8-track, and we went over to John's house and kind of did our parts, and it was just kind of this fun little thing we did. I didn't really think it would ever see the light of day. I did perform with them a little bit. I don't know if we performed those exact songs. We may have, I think, once or twice. And so the times I got to play a couple times with REM on stage were around that time. And it also was in the same moment where he asked me to learn. I had the Velvet Underground, you know, the Velvet Underground and Nico.
Yeah.
I had, you know, two or three Velvet Underground records in my apartment. And Michael asked me to learn Pale Blue Eyes and Femme Fatale.
Is that right?
And he's, I want you to learn those songs and then go teach them to Peter.
Really?
And it was like so weird because could learn them better than me. Like I could barely, you know, play guitar. It was so weird. And I went over to Peter's house and sort of showed him the couple chords I thought they were. I probably didn't even get it right, you know. And so I remember I joined them on stage a couple times for Velvet Underground covers.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's kind of a funny story. Yeah. I just saw Peter. He came to our Portland show. He seemed really good.
Oh, that's great.
He's got a new band.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to
do
something. I don't know, record or come out or something.
And of course, you were in a band with Michael's sister for a few years,
Linda
right?
Stipe, and okay.
Yeah, that's a record I have at home.
Where I played minimalist guitar because, again, I didn't really know how to play guitar yet.
Okay, this is a question from Peter Nordgren, and he says, ask Matthew about the Lincoln music scene when he was coming up. So what was the music scene like for you then before you moved to Athens?
Well, in my mind, in the music scene that was in Lincoln, I was really young, you know, when I knew it. I played from about 13, I played in this group called the Specs. And I was like the teen bass player, but they were all in college or just, if not very close to college age. And so the scene I knew of was all these older people. So I was kind of in awe of anyone. You know, I was in awe of a lot of the bands that were around. There was a power pop band called The Boys. And one of The Boys' singles came out at the time I was 13 and playing with these older kids. Looking at you the way that I do should make you know what you haven't showed. And talking to you the way that I do should make you see what you mean to me. And living on that, baby, it's you. And on my 13th birthday, we went to the rock club, the Drumstick, and the boys were playing. And it was like Cheap Trick or something to me. They were so loud. It was amazing. They're, you know, kind of like a glam band, you know. And so I was always just in awe of those people, you know. And I really, for a long time, was just a bass player that kind of kept to myself and was watching and lucky to be involved in the things that I was.
Okay.
That was a good question.
Okay, I think this might be a good time for a little break.
Let's do it.
I'm tired. But we have to keep going. You're going to hear a little bit more about us promoting the show or some aspect of the show, and then we'll come back, and you're going to hear the epic conclusion to the Matthew Sweet interview. So, Patrick, as I look around your basement here, I notice that you have a lot of albums.
I do, yeah. I collect vinyl and a lot of records.
Very many albums. How many would you say you have here?
Oh, probably 68 million.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
And so I would rate your record collection 5 stars. And the funny thing about ratings is you can rate lots of things these days.
You can rate anything. You can rate albums, which I like to do. You can rate oven mitts.
I mean, oven mitts is pretty easy. Like, do they protect your hands or not? And we would appreciate it if people would rate our podcast,
right,
Rock in the Suburbs, on what's now called Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
Formerly the artist known as iTunes.
That's right. And so we're going to show you how to do that, folks. What you do is you log on to Apple Podcasts,
right?
You find Rock in the Suburbs. Then you rate something. So right now, Jim, we're going to rate the Billy Squire album. Uh-huh. Don't Say No. I paid $1 for this. Okay. It's got some songs on it. The Stroke, might have heard of it. Lonely as the Night, another good hit.
Yep.
Don't Say No, I Need You, 2 Days Gone, D-A-Z-E. How many stars did you give this album?
Well, based purely on the album cover art, I'm going to give it 5 stars.
Okay. You know what I'm going to give it? 5 stars.
All right. And we would hope that listeners would do the same for our show. So go on, rate Rock in the Suburbs on Apple Podcasts. And also, while you're there, we'd love it. You could just be a few words, one sentence, whatever. Give us a nice little review, too. Now, the most popular set of questions, we have 6 of them here, are on one topic.
Wow. Okay.
Can you guess what that might be that people want to know about?
I don't know.
It's all about the Susanna Hoffs.
Under the cover.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Collaboration.
Sure.
So for many of them are the same. Basically, will you be doing any more music?
Yes.
With Susanna Hoffs.
It's funny. Well, I just saw Susanna in Los Angeles last month, and we said, we got to do something. You know, I don't know what exactly we'll do, but I think we will do something else at some point. One of the things going on is there are a lot of songs we recorded for, in particular, the 70s volume that never came out.
Okay.
We recorded, we were up into the almost like Tomorrow Forever number
of
songs, up in the 30s for sure. When Shout Factory, in the beginning, they said, we'll make it a double album, quote unquote, and so that's why we were recording so many songs. And then after a while, they were just sort of mad it was taking so long. So they were like, pick a regular album's worth, you know, and turn it in.
Right.
And so we kind of didn't finish doing all the stuff we would have pulled from to,
that's really
to make the 70s record. So there's a bunch of stuff from that. And I know Susanna really wants me to get out the hard drives and dig through that and finish it so we can release it in some way.
I was just going to ask whose idea it was to record How Soon Is Now.
I would say it was probably me.
Yeah.
I probably picked that one.
That seems...
But Sue would have known it and liked it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we always agreed on stuff on some level or we didn't do it. You know?
That one to me always seemed like, wow, that's an uncoverable song.
Right. It is
came
uncoverable.
Out so perfect.
It was really difficult to do
I
never felt like we quite got it right.
It seems like it would be impossible.
Well, it's based
among a handful
on this
of songs.
Guitar riff thing that sort of does the time for the song. And it was really difficult to recreate that.
I would imagine
really,
that
really hard.
Tremolo is almost perfect on that song.
It's a unique song.
Yeah, I mean, it really
is. Very different. Rock history. How did the whole collaboration even start? How did that get going?
Well, we, you know, the reason we know each other so well goes back to the Austin Powers movies. We were both friends with Mike Myers when he was first writing the first Austin Powers movie and trying out the character. And her husband, Jay, ended up directing the first movie, and he was a film instructor at UCLA at the time. And we would all just kind of hang out, you know, at Mike's now and then. And sometimes we'd have jam sessions with the musicians, and Mike really likes to play different instruments. He'd play the drums and he'd do different right. things. And then we started making up stuff where he would be the character singing the song. And so we ended up being this fictional band, Ming T, that was Austin's band in the first and the third movie. We did songs for it.
Right, you did that song BBC.
BBC yeah. was the hit from the first one. And then Daddy Wasn't There was the song in the third one.
Daddy, Daddy wasn't there to change my underwear. It seems he doesn't care. When I was criticized, when I was ostracized, when I was jazzercised, staking kidney pies, when I was modernized, when I was circumcised, Daddy wasn't there.
So we knew each other much better from kind of hanging around and doing all that stuff. I knew her just a little bit before that. And at some point, the Bangles invited me to sing at a place called McCabe's in Los Angeles. That's an acoustic guitar store. That's a little club at night. It's really famous. And I saw Sue there backstage, and I said, you know, I've always loved your voice. I'd love to do something together sometime. My idea was more that we'd write songs together and she was the singer, you know, it'd be like a Susanna Hoffs album. Yeah. And then, but she was talking to Shout Factory at the time about doing it in some kind of project for them. And they glommed onto the idea of like, you guys should do covers together. That'd be so awesome. And their, you know, excitement about it was sort of, you know, contagious to us. And we really wanted to do something. And so we're like, yeah, let's do that. We'll do a bunch of 60s songs or something. And it was really fun. And we got to know each other really, really, really well.
People really seem to love those records.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of...
You really captured something there. I mean, a lot of people have done covers records, but there's something about what you guys
did. We tried to make them like the original record,
kind
of why it was exciting. I think a lot of people do covers and they try to reinvent it as some other kind of thing, you know? We wanted to know why that original one was great and then sort of live in it, you know?
Got it.
And I don't have the ability to learn and play exact parts from all these genius people that played them all the years, but we tried to kind of emulate what it was that sort of the feeling about the song. And I think that helped us have a good time doing it, which, you know, whenever that's going on, it comes across, you know, on a record, and that's probably why people like it.
Oh, it's so perfect. And I mean, even the cover art that you have already, as a listener, you're in the frame of mind, like, these are people who'd like listening to records, and I'm going to sort of like listen to this music through them or with them or that kind of thing.
Oh, that's great. Well, the artwork is great. That guy, Steve Fotheringham or Fartheringham, something. I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but his art was perfect for it. And that we got him for all three was great. They made a box set, on, I believe, Demon Records out of England that has all three of them, and it looks just gorgeous with all the artwork and stuff.
I've seen that on the internet,
But like Patrick was saying, I mean, you guys take on some pretty ambitious stuff with How Soon Is Now, and there's a Yes song. And,
yeah, I know, that's funny.
Well, that was kind of part of the fun.
Right.
It's like, what if we did this song? You know? And so sometimes the crazier it was, the more fun it was. It just depended, you know. Sometimes we did a thing that, you know, made perfect sense we would be doing, and sometimes we were just, it was on a lark. We would just be talking and go, what if we did that song? And so we would add another song, you know. So we did record a lot of things.
Scott Bird asks, do you have a favorite track from those albums?
Oh man, I would have to listen to them really to know. You know, I mean, I have favorite memories when we got Steve Howe to play lead guitar and the acoustic 12 string on All Good People.
Yeah,
you know, that was so cool. Fun. You know, I talked to him on the phone in England, and we sent the stuff to him, and then he, you know, sent back the tracks, which he'd, you know, snuck after an Asia session, like later at night. He got the engineers to stay and they'd do his part for it. And he told me, you know, the exact guitar he used and all that stuff. So that was a fun one. But there are just so many things we did. I would have to hear to think, oh, this is really the one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then one last thing on this. Curtis Ransom asks, why doesn't Susanna Hoffs age? Is she an android?
She's not an android. She does have an ageless quality that's pretty amazing. She's, you know, a little thing. So maybe she just kind of doesn't age as fast as larger organisms or something.
I'll take that. I like that.
She was so diminutive. Like when I saw her last month, I was just like, you're so tiny, Sue.
Thanks very much for
being on. Thank you, Matthew, so much.
On our little show.
Thanks, guys.
How great was that?
It was great. Yeah. And it all started with an Austin Powers movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Isn't that funny? Jamming over at Mike Myers' house. Yeah, wonderful stuff. And nice to hear him talk about Athens and REM a little bit and Michael Stipe and Michael Stipe's sister in that early band. Mm-hmm. That was kind of fun. You know,
the band was called OOK?
Yeah, that was OOK was the band he had with Linda Stipe.
Right.
And then the Community Trolls, of course,
right.
Sort of the three-song project. Yeah, wonderful stuff. One thing I wanted to mention to everybody and relay to everybody, this was after we got done recording. We were talking to Matthew there while we were packing up the equipment and just kind of, you know, chatting with him a little bit. And he told us a story of, so he's moved back to Nebraska now.
Right.
Right, because he lived in LA for a while. And so he's kind of moved back to where, you know, his home was. And I think he grew up in Omaha, right?
That's right.
So he said they played a show somewhere in Omaha or Lincoln, Nebraska. I can't remember which one. Somewhere in there. And a guy came to the show with a tape and a letter that the 12 or 13-year-old Matthew Sweet had written to this label called Titan Records.
Right.
Which is a power pop label in Kansas City or Nebraska, somewhere in there. And it was Matthew... as a 13-year-old in the like garage band he was in with older guys, you know, sending this guy a tape and a letter saying you need to sign me to your label, and the guy had kept it after all these years. I thought that was the best story. So funny.
That is amazing.
Yeah, wasn't it great? And he told us about that and a band called The Boys. I guess were kind of a legendary power pop band in the mid 70s in Nebraska on this Titan Records label.
You know about the Numero Group.
Numero Group.
Right?
Yes.
And they put out all these great reissues of music that people may have otherwise, you know, overlooked or forgotten about or whatever.
Yeah, they kind of rescue a lot of forgotten great music from America and other places.
So they have a compilation out called Titan.
Yep.
It's all pop.
It's and great. It's the boys are on there.
Yeah.
Like four or five tracks by them. And
yeah. It's music from 78 to 81, it looks like, released on the Titan label.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, it's like power pop stuff. So
fantastic.
I want to get this record.
Check it out, too.
I want to get this record. What will this set me back here? Two CDs, $25.
Not bad.
That's not bad. All right.
And if the young Matthew Sweet thought it was the greatest label there was, then how can you go wrong?
All right. One last thing I want to say about the Under the Covers.
Yes.
Records. There were three volumes. One is covers of songs from the 60s, one from the 70s, one from the 80s. Mm-hmm. He mentioned that maybe they'll do some other work together. I think he said the 70s one had a lot of unreleased stuff.
Yeah,
maybe
they recorded a bunch.
He didn't mention if they were going to do a 90s version. I don't know. And when, you know, we talked about sort of like how ambitious they were and did some, you know, some songs you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
I think My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, right, that would be perfect.
Right there,
yeah.
Right? Don't you think?
As soon as they get done with that Party Line jingle cover, they can dive right into My Bloody Valentine.
Yes, there you go. So we're expecting the 90s edition, I think.
Yes.
But what I want to say, though, you know, really seriously, though, people mentioned really like those records. And tell me, Patrick, what you think, but a lot of artists have done cover albums,
yes.
you know, solo artist bands, you know, lots of people have done that. And I think, you know, the whole idea of even sort of like teaming up with somebody and doing some kind of collaboration, maybe along those lines, is not unique in this regard.
No.
But there's something about their pairing and the songs they select or something, and sort of the kind of like the sincerity, I think, of the way they approach them.
There you go.
That it's just magical in a way that I think
you hit it on the head with the sincerity of it, right? Yeah. It's very clear that their passion for these songs is imbued all the way throughout their covers. And he even said, I mean, he says in there at one point, we're not trying to make a better version or a different version. We just want to show how great these songs are. And that really, really comes through how sincere they are. There's no angle about it. It's just truly loving the music.
It really comes through each and every song.
Especially on that 60s one. You know, they genuinely really, really love that music.
Yeah. So, bravo. I mean, I don't know how they pulled that off, but it's great. Yeah. And
the 90s and the 100s more. And the 101s.
And everyone I've introduced those records to just loves them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so once again, our thanks to Matthew Sweet.
Thanks
it was
so
just,
much.
Just fantastic.
Nice man. He seemed in great spirits and is looking great and playing great. Really good. Really good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to whatever he does next.
Me too.
It'll be great. We'll do other interviews from time to time.
Absolutely.
We're going to keep this going. I think people like them.
Rocking the Suburbs universe.
I think we have Bob Dylan next.
Yeah.
Right? And then Paul McCartney.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to spend a week in Paul's farm in Scotland. It'll be fun.
He lives in Scotland now?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. He's got a farm there.
Okay. He probably does.
That's where he told us to meet him.
All right. That's what he told us.
Yeah.
All right. This is Rockin' the Suburbs.
Yes, it is.
You should listen not just to the Matthew Sweet episodes, but
every day.
Every day. So we'll be back tomorrow, just two of us kind of blathering on like this. Yes. You can find the show at Apple Podcasts or Audio Boom or other podcast platforms, whatever you like to listen. And you can also visit our website, suburbspod.com. The show streams there, or there's other fun stuff like notes and photos and lists of the songs that we play on the show.
It's a whole big list.
All that.
Thank you, Sam.
A couple articles, all kinds of stuff there. Maybe stuff we don't even know
is
on there.
It's on there.
Also, you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com. We'd love to hear what you have to say about Matthew Sweet's music. Also, you can call the Suburban Party Line. You can leave a message there. Then we put your voice on the show.
Do that.
That number is 612-440-1984. Wait, why was I doing that?
I was stepping
all over you. 612-440-1984. There you go.
You're tired.
And there's also a jingle soon to be covered by Matt and Sue, right?
That's it.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the Suburban Party Line.
Okay. Although we love Jody Manross's.
Yeah, the original is great.
Yes. What else? Is that it?
That's it.
I think that's it.
I think that's all you need to know. Thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with some more goofy stuff tomorrow. I'm Jim Lenihan.
Patrick Foster.
Talk to you later.
Sometimes I feel I gotta get away. Bells chime.
I could barely, you know, play guitar. It was so weird.